This is edition number 2030 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday the 14th of August 2026. Hello, you're listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday the 13th of August 2026. My name is Bill Newby-Grant and my fellow readers are
Hilary Newby-Grant,
Sue Hill,
Jane Bradbury.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 5:34 a.m. and will set at about 20:25 p.m. Please join us in wishing a warm welcome to Mike of Briston. We hope you enjoy listening to The Mardler, Mike.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes a tribute to a much-loved comedian, revolutionary eye surgery, disappearing millionaires, and a profile of the Norfolk dragonfly.
But we begin with the main news items, which include objections raised to towns' housing plans, anger at prisoners' early release, pizza wars, and the triumph of a popular village festival. Let's start with those lead stories.
Contentious plans for 49 new homes and a new cemetery in Holt are being weighed by a council. The application from Phoenix Strategic Land would deliver 49 dwellings, 17 of them affordable, alongside a 0.7-hectare cemetery extension to be gifted to Holt Town Council. A wave of detailed objections has been sent to the North Norfolk District Council following the initial consultation on the scheme. But town councillors have backed the application, saying new homes are vital to tackle a shortage of affordable, energy-efficient housing. It also said the new homes will help meet the government target of 1.5 million new homes in England by 2029. Under new housing requirements, North Norfolk District Council's housing target has been raised by 65%. The Town Council highlighted that Holt's only active burial ground on Clye Road is nearing capacity and said the extension could safeguard local burial provision for up to a century. But locals and organisations have raised strong concerns over the development. The Environment Agency has warned that the area is already in serious water stress. It said, the location has the potential to increase abstraction from groundwater sources. The water resource demand of the development should be considered. This supply needs to be sustainable and have no adverse impact on Water Framework Directive water bodies, including chalk streams. Concerns from locals describe the location as unsuitable, highlighting heavy car dependence and a rise in traffic, particularly in New Street and High Street. One objector said, the site comprises actively farmed, productive agricultural land that contributes to the local rural economy and landscape character. Development would result in the permanent loss of this land. Objections mention highway safety risks, harm to local wildlife, including deer and birds of prey, pressure on schools, healthcare and drainage. They said the application fails key national and local planning tests. One comment said, the application does not provide a compelling case and therefore the only option available to the council is to refuse the application.
An angry Norfolk MP has demanded answers from the Justice Secretary over the potential early release of a drink driver who killed a 20-year-old woman from Stalham. Stephen Aquarone, MP for North Norfolk, said he has written to the Ministry of Justice again after the latest reply does not answer the central issue in the case of Malcolm Waite. Waite, now in his early 70s, killed Fenella Hawes in July 2022, while 5 times over the drink drive limit. He was jailed for 8 years at Norwich Crown Court for causing death by dangerous driving. The Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, has announced a pause to the Sentencing Act 2026 early release scheme amid mounting concern from victims' families. But the new policy is set to resume for most prisoners, excluding rapists and groomers. Mr. Aquarin says that it means that Waite is back on the early release list, with his provisional date now understood to have moved later in the autumn rather than being scrapped altogether. No family should have to endure that loss, he said. To then be told, with little warning, that the offender may be released earlier than they had understood is a fresh and deeply painful blow. He praised Miss Hawes's family for showing extraordinary courage by speaking out. He says they still do not have the clarity they deserve. Miss Hawes' relatives were later told that Waite could be freed halfway through his sentence under the early release scheme, prompting their call for any offender whose crime caused a death to be excluded. Mr. Aquarone said, "How can a crime that took Fenella's life be treated as non-violent for release purposes?" Fenella's sister, Rosie Shepherd, 31, previously said, "It very much feels like the wound of the trauma is being reopened after spending so long trying to rebuild ourselves. Someone who has killed someone should not be up for some review like this. The car is a weapon because you can do damage with it."
An independent pizzeria has urged people to support local businesses ahead of a major chain opening in North Norfolk. Rudono Pizza, based in the courtyard of the Black Swan in North Walsham, makes sourdough pizzas and has a Google 5-star rating. It has urged people not to forget them after Domino's, the UK's largest pizza chain, announced it will open its North Walsham store on September the 1st. In a post on Facebook, Rudono Pizza, owned by Rudy Jordan, said he learned of the chain's opening date after searching online for food options in the town. 4 months, Rudono Pizza has been right at the top thanks to incredible reviews and our consistent 5-star rating, the post said. Every review you've left has helped put a small independent business on the map. Today, that changed. Domino's are now sitting at the top of the search results because they're running sponsored adverts. In a Facebook post, the business said the arrival of Domino's with a larger advertising budget would not change its approach. "I'm not worried about competing on advertising budgets. I'll keep competing on quality, consistency, and the experience we offer," it said. So when you're deciding where to order your next pizza, remember there's a small independent business right here in North Walsham that's poured everything into giving you the best pizza possible. The post attracted lots of attention, with other North Norfolk businesses commenting on how Domino's opening stores nearby had affected their businesses. Rudono Pizza Message thanked customers for their orders, reviews and recommendations, adding that their support means more than you probably realise. This will be the third new Domino's to open in the county over summer. Wroxham and Hoverton had a new store open on Church Lane in June, and another opened in Sheringham on Church Street in July. Domino's has been approached for comment.
More than 10,000 people gathered at the 60th anniversary of a well-loved village festival. The annual Worsted Festival was held on the weekend of July the 25th and 26th, with the village's population swelling to 10 times its regular size. It began in 1966 to support repairs to St Mary's Church and has grown into a major fundraising and community event. This year's attractions included galloping horses, BMX stunt riders, dog agility, live music, a chef theatre, fairground rides, and BrickCon for Lego fans. There were also more than 100 artisan craft stalls and a wide array of food concessions, plus a well-stocked bar. 66 stallholders have already reserved pitches, meaning more than half of next year's spots are already allocated. This year's event raised more than £100,000, with around £40,000 set to be distributed to local good causes. The figures were announced at the festival wash-up meeting last Friday night in the village hall. Jenny Gubbins, the festival's treasurer, said, "This is overall a great result for a local charity in a smallish village run by volunteers, and everyone involved should be proud of what has been achieved." She said rising costs did affect this year's total, with more facilities and more music acts being brought in. The outgoing chair, Jane Bond, added, "I want to thank my fellow trustees and all the volunteers I've worked with. I'm proud of what we've achieved and of the help we've given to so many charities and organisations." Organisers are now inviting application for grants, with the deadlines set for September the 30th. The Worsted 5 Mile Run, which is held the Friday night before the festival, is also growing, with 737 runners taking part. Next year's event will take place on July the 24th and 25th.
A historic pub has reopened with a fresh look 8 months after being taken over by new owners. The Earl Arms in Heydon, which dates back to the 16th century, held a reopening event at the end of last month. The pub had been run by Andrew Harrison for 26 years, who decided to hand it over to the Heydon estate in December last year, which is now working with Tom Ginn, the owner of Norwich-based Bread Hospitality. The team had first hoped to open in April, but said that the extent of the renovation work required was far more extensive than first thought. Its opening event brought in crowds last weekend with live music and free food and drink samples. The pub is recognised by CAMRA as having an interior of special historic interest, with features such as handmade terracotta floor tiles that have been used in East Anglian buildings for centuries. Before the renovation, Tom Ginn, the founder of Bread Hospitality, said, "The old pub is stacked in history, so we don't want to change too much."
Steam train services are returning to the tracks of North Norfolk Railway after coming to a halt due to a spate of wildfires amid scorching weather. The railway has announced it is delighted at the return of limited steam services, following the discussions with the Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service. It comes after the steam trains were suspended in July as a precautionary measure due to the ongoing heat wave. Trains will now once again run between Sheringham and Weybourne. The spokesman for North Norfolk Railway said, "By limiting steam trains to the Sheringham-Weybourne section, we will continue to protect the vulnerable Kelling Heath and avoid Kelling Bank, where locomotives have to work hard, which can increase the chance of emitting sparks. This, along with our existing fire mitigation measures and ongoing reviews, means that we can introduce steam whilst continuing to support the Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service at this time." The Heritage Diesels will operate the full length of the line from Sheringham to Holt, and passengers can change from steam to diesel or vice versa at Weybourne and Sheringham. Day Rover tickets will also be valid for unlimited hop-on and hop-off travel all day.
The best value for money private schools in the region have been revealed. In a new ranking, several independent schools in Norfolk have been evaluated to determine how worthy they are of parents' investments. The annual analysis by The Telegraph factors in the average number of pupils who have achieved A or A star results in their A levels, the number of pupils, and the facilities the school offers. Based on these factors, Norwich School, which is located on the Close in the city, is the best value for parents in Norfolk, with its being rated good by writers at The Telegraph. The day school's annual fee is £25,218 per student, slightly above the national average. It has also gained a high average for A-level students' results, with 51.6% of them gaining A or A star, which is above the independent school average of 49.4% and the local state school average of 23.1%. Elsewhere in the county, Gresham School in Holt was rated fair, with its £26,130 annual fee and 44% of its pupils gained the top grades.
Visitors to Norfolk's beaches continue to repeatedly ignore warnings by getting too close to seals, a wildlife charity has said. Friends of Horsey Seals has been forced to take further action, launching a seal disturbance form to encourage people to report these incidents, as well as urging people to sign a petition backing its Give Seals Space campaign. It comes as repeated disturbances have been reported along the Norfolk coast as tourists ignore warnings to keep their distance from the marine animals. A spokesman for Friends of Horsey Seals said, "Once again, how close is too close? The message is really simple. Give seals space and enjoy them from afar. Government guidelines recommend staying at least 100 metres away from seals wherever possible. But recent incidents show people approaching much closer. Visitors who witness disturbances are encouraged to take photos or video and submit reports through the Friends of Horsey website." The charity spokeswoman added, "If you do witness a disturbance, and if you are comfortable to do so, please take pictures or videos. Then use our form to report it. Only then can we really start to understand the true scale of it."
Our next few news stories include a volunteer's fundraising success, neighbours' approval of disused land plan, and a new fossil museum for a Norfolk town.
A long-term fundraiser has raised £38,200 for a children's hospice. Dee Pert from Aylsham has been supporting East Anglia's children's hospices, known as EACH, for nearly 25 years through garage sales, stalls and community events. She stepped up her efforts following the launch of the Nook Appeal in 2016, which raised money to build EACH's purpose-built hospice in Framingham Earl. Mrs. Pert said, "Fundraising has become such a big part of my life, and it's given me an awful lot of joy and satisfaction. People often ask if I have a personal connection, and the truth is that I don't, although I've met families that have received support. It's not about me, it's about EACH. It's a charity I feel so passionately about because of my love of children." Her activities have included tombolas, silent auctions, and regular garage sales, along with securing donations from businesses. She organised a tombola stall on the day EACH opened its new shop in Aylsham. During the pandemic, she raised nearly £12,000 by selling donated goods from her front garden using an honesty box. Mrs. Pert credits much of her success to the support of her family and the wider community, as well as her husband Mervyn. Megan Kemp, community fundraiser at EACH, said, "They're wonderful people and the amount they've raised is absolutely staggering. Their incredible commitment over the past two decades has been nothing short of inspiring, and we're so grateful for everything they've done to help families receiving care and support from each. I hope they're both incredibly proud of their remarkable achievements. Although the couple has scaled back their fundraising since Mr. Pert suffered a stroke, Mrs. Pert continues to support each in any way she can.
Neighbours have supported plans to transform what they described as an unsightly and unused patch of land in Norfolk into a new family home. North Norfolk District Council has given the green light for a three-bedroom, self-built bungalow to be built in East Runton. The plot, the land west of the Budleyers off Green Lane, is currently used for parking and storage. But neighbours said it had become rough ground with little practical use. One neighbour, whose rear garden borders the northern edge of the site, said in planning papers that they welcome this development on what is currently waste land. They added that the proposal represented a natural infill, following gradual development around the land over 30 to 40 years. The bungalow will be built roughly in the centre of the site, with the home cut into the bank so that it will sit lower within the plot. A nearly identical application was submitted around a decade ago, but revised plans, including resurfacing part of the driveway and lowering the boundary walls, have been submitted. Another neighbour said they were pleased an unused parcel of land would become a home for a local family. Better this than a dumping ground for a bonfire with vermin prowling the area, they said. Highway officers had previously raised concerns about visibility, where the walls and vegetation on neighbouring land could affect the sight lines. However, planning permission has now been granted for the development. A further supporter said the bungalow would greatly improve the overall appearance of the immediate area, transforming an unsightly area of wasteland into a tasteful and well-designed home. Planning documents state the design will ensure it has no impact on neighbours through overlooking, loss of sunlight or overshadowing. Access would be via a private drive, with revised plans including resurfacing part of the route and lowering the boundary walls near the junction. Residents backing the plans said the site was within the village envelope and argued that the scale, materials, design and access arrangements were very suitable for the area.
A holiday park in one of Norfolk's top locations for stargazing is bringing back a celestial event following last year's successful debut. Kelling Heath Holiday Park, near the North Norfolk coast, will host its second Wild Sky weekend from Friday, September the 25th, to Sunday, September the 27th. Guests of all ages are invited to explore the wonders of the night sky through nature-themed activities and guided experiences. Claire Pemberton, Guest Experience Director at Kelling Heath Holiday Park, said, "Our Wild Sky weekend is all about helping families experience the simple joy of looking up at our skies together. In a world where we're often focused on screens and busy schedules, spending time beneath a truly dark sky offers a chance to slow down, reconnect with nature and spark children's imaginations. As darkness falls, families can settle beneath Norfolk's expansive skies to spot constellations, planets and satellites while warming up with a hot chocolate. Kelling Heath is a two-star dark sky discovery site, known for its low light, pollution and clear night views, making it an ideal spot for both amateur and seasoned stargazers. Activities throughout the weekend will include guided stargazing, bat walks, a glow-in-the-dark woodland trail for younger visitors, and nature experiences after dark. There is also the chance to explore astronomy, learn about nocturnal wildlife, and enjoy woodland walks and the cloud watching during the day. Visitors can also make use of the site's dark sky viewing platform, and self-guided dark sky activity packs to continue exploring the night sky. Most activities are free for guests staying at the park across its camping, touring or hire accommodation, though some may carry a small charge. Kelling Heath is offering a 3-for-2-night offer on touring stays over the Wild Sky weekend using the promo code WILDSKY26. More information and booking details are available at www.kellingheath.co.uk.
A new fossil gallery featuring finds made by a Norfolk paleontologist more than 100 years ago has opened at one of the county's museums. The Discovery Gallery at Cromer Museum tells the story of deep time through the work of Cromer geologist and paleontologist Alfred Savin, who collected fossils more than a century ago along the North Norfolk coast. Mr. Savin, who lived from 1860 to 1948, made his living selling fossils and souvenirs at a shop in Church Street. But he also played a crucial role in documenting the finds which contribute to the understanding of the prehistoric Ice Age wildlife of Norfolk, and included mammoths, rhinos, giant deer, and hyenas. Two major collections of fossils he found were transferred to the Natural History Museum in London in 1897 and 1946, while other items from his shop can be found in museums across the UK and Ireland. The new gallery in Cromer Museum, funded by a grant from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, features real and replica fossils, which visitors can handle, alongside a touchscreen display that explores North Norfolk as it was, nearly a million years ago. Paul Neal, chairman of the Norfolk Joint Museums Committee, said, "The Discovery Gallery represents a significant development for Cromer Museum, combining original fossils, replica handling collections, and digital interpretation to create new opportunities for visitors of all ages to engage with prehistoric history. Rare specimens, now housed in London, have been 3D scanned and printed so visitors can learn to identify fossils by sight and touch. Replicas include a mammoth tibia, backbone and tooth, as well as a rhinoceros jaw and giant deer antlers. Visitors can also touch original fossils from the North Norfolk coast, including mammoth remains up to 800,000 years old, a 1-million-year-old rhino tooth, giant ammonites, fossilised wood and marine fossils. The gallery forms part of the Deep History Coast Discovery Trail, a 36-kilometre route along the North Norfolk coast from Weybourne to Cart Gap. Peter Stibbins, chairman of the Friends of Cromer Museum, which worked with the museum to apply the lottery grant, said, "We're delighted that the stories and discoveries of collectors such as Alfred Savin can now be shared in exciting new ways."
A Norfolk man has denied taking part in a break-in at a drone factory owned by an Israel-based defence company. Peter Jones, 41, of Alder Fenway, Hofton, appeared at Leicester Crown Court alongside five others in connection with an incident at UAV Tactical Systems in Braunston, near Leicester. The incident occurred at a drone factory owned by Elbit Systems UK, an Israel-based defence company. The group is accused of targeting the site because of its perceived links to Elbit Systems UK and supply of arms and component parts used by Israel in attacks on Palestine, according to information previously heard at the Old Bailey. Jones appeared in court alongside Megan Kennard, 25, Hal Hockney, 27, Cyril Davis, 31, Michael Sacker, 28, and Ray Rivers, 39. All six pleaded not guilty to one count of burglary and one count of damaging property valued at more than £5,000 during an incident on April the 24th. Jones, Kennard and Hockney were released on conditional bail, while the remaining defendants were remanded in custody. Judge Spencer said 6 weeks had been set aside for the trial, which will begin in Leicester.
A model railway club is gearing up for its next show. Broadland Model Railway Club, the BMRC, fresh from its successful May event in Stalham, is set to host another show at Hofton Village Hall on Sunday, August the 30th. The exhibition will feature guest layouts, including the Slate Museum, Zero Gauge, Cromer Beach Engine Shed Road, Zero Gauge, and Schlum, 009 Gauge. Club layouts Herrington North, Hamstall Green 00 gauge, Clearpoint Haven 00 gauge, and Broadland 00 gauge will also be on display. The Midland and Great Northern Joint Railway Society will have a stand highlighting their locomotive restoration and maintenance efforts. A spokesman for the club said, "Our very own loco doctor will be there to look at and hopefully fix any issues that you may have with your trains." And Jeff Hiscock has a second-hand stall, and Just N Scale will be there too. Admission is £5 with free parking available, and the event runs between 10 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. with refreshments available all day.
A seaside hotel has bagged a major national award. The Coastal Manor Hotel and Inn in Blakeney earned the Operational Excellence Award from the Coaching Inn Group, which operates 42 other hotels and inns across the country. A delighted general manager, Liam Kelly, said the award was a tribute to everybody in his over 30-strong team. "There is really a great camaraderie between all departments, with everyone willing to support one another and provide a cheerful, can-do service for all our regulars and tourist visitors," he said. More than 300 colleagues and guests attended the awards ceremony held at the Engine Shed in Lincoln. Adam Charity, Chief Operating Officer at the Coaching Inn Group, added, "The Coastal Manor Hotel and Inn team were most worthy winners of the Operational Excellence accolade and a real credit to the hospitality industry. Last year at the awards, the hotel bagged the Team Spirit Award in recognition of the way everyone works together and supports one another. Also in 2025, it was the only Norfolk establishment to make the top 25 of TripAdvisor's Travelling Choice Best of the Best ranking."
A North Norfolk site has been named one of the best places in the UK for its rare and wonderful wildlife. The Clye and Salthouse Marshes were included in the top 20 places across the UK for coastal wildlife in the summer by The Times. It described the area as a sanctuary for birds and walkers alike, with wide open marshes, huge skies and sweeping beaches, and mentioned the spoonbill bird with its long spatula-like bill, which it described as a most unusual sight.
You are listening to edition number 2030 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 14th of August 2026. Still to come, there are items about Clye Windmill up for sale, a cat apparently shot, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all of that,
some local events.
The Forgotten Fabric Clear Out at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, bringing together a vibrant mix of fabric, pattern and haberdashery stalls, both indoors and outdoors. Free entry. Whitwell and Reetham Railway at Whitwell Road, Reetham. The Forgotten Fabric Clearout at gmail.com 0787981861.
Night Must Fall at the Sheringham Little Theatre. A psychological thriller. Performances start at 2 p.m. and run from the 19th to the 27th of August. Timings are Wednesday, August the 19th at 7:30 p.m, Thursday, August the 20th at 2:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m, Friday, August the 21st at 7:30 p.m, Wednesday, August the 26th at 7:30 p.m, and lastly, Thursday, August the 27th, 2:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Ticket costs range from £15.50 to £29.50, and further details are available at sheringhamlittletheatre.com.
Thursday, the 20th of August. We have Wild Thursday's Children's Activities at 10 a.m. and the cost is £6. Fun, creative and hands-on at the Wind Energy Museum, Staithe Road, Repsworth Bastwick, Great Yarmouth. Info at windenergymuseum.co.uk and the phone number is 07 96 40 7864.
And a letter.
Town is being destroyed. I am concerned that in the ever unstoppable growth of Holt as a destination town, scant attention has been paid to the destruction of what once made Holt lovely. Yet another development of luxury homes is about to be decided upon by a council who have been emotionally blackmailed by developers. Clye Road in Holt borders an area of outstanding natural beauty and is also home to the increasingly full town cemetery. A Faustian deal has been made with Phoenix developers, whereby they will donate a portion of the beautiful arable land they have purchased and expand the cemetery in return for planning permission for 47 luxury homes. Is this worth reporting? I believe so. How many more new build homes that will in no way advantage the residents of Holt are we meant to tolerate? What once made Holt a destination town was its Georgian charm. It is sad to report that this charm is now being choked by the imbalance of pseudo and mock Georgian houses that are encroaching upon and overwhelming Holt. Areas of beauty are what once drew people to Holt, beauty that has the possibility of enduring long after the thrall of designer coffee has waned. I believe our countryside is worth preserving, especially productive arable land that also happens to be beautiful. Yes, we need more housing, especially affordable homes for the young, and there is plenty of space for these in less destructive places. I hate bullies, and after 44 years of teaching, I know how to recognise them. Phoenix developers have used emotional blackmail and bully boy tactics to influence the town council, and I find this deplorable and intolerable. Sue Rogers, Holt resident.
We now turn to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we pay tribute to a comedy legend, hear about a revolutionary eye surgery, Britain's disappearing millionaires, and an introduction to Norfolk dragonflies.
Comedian Bill Oddie has died. The Times pays tribute. July 2026. For those who grew up in the 1970s, Bill Oddie was the eternal goody, a cheerful television character in a long scarf who lived in a pigsty of a house with two friends, cracked lavatorial jokes, and rode a bicycle made for three. Later generations knew him as a presenter of wildlife programmes, including Birding with Bill Oddie and Bill Oddie Goes Wild, displaying a lively and unforced enthusiasm, as well as an ability to talk off the cuff, never fazed when the rare species for which the cameras had been set up failed to appear. The Goodies took its first bow in 1970, running for 77 episodes over 12 years. Their humour was endearingly daft and physical, owing much to the slapstick of cinema cartoons and silent films, with explosions, camera tricks, and special effects as the trio mounted their trandom. Setting off from their office in Cricklewood, they were prepared to do anything, anytime, including being chased by a giant marauding kitten and abducted by alien rabbits. Amid the nonsense, they addressed issues such as apartheid, with a sketch featuring a regime called Apartheid, where short people were segregated from the rest of society. They were almost cartoon figures themselves. Timbrook Taylor playing an effete royalist in a Union Jack waistcoat, Graham Gardner as a bespectacled boffin, and Oddie the short, plump, and eternally scruffy anarchist. Unlike cartoon characters, however, the real-life Goodies, none of them trained stuntmen, often emerged bruised. In the opening credits, Brooke Taylor stuck a pike into a tree, then spun around on the end of it like a Catherine wheel. Elsewhere, Oddie walked on the roof of a moving double-decker bus, while Garden risked being mowed down by a barrel hurtling down a hill. "What we do is cartoon humour, and it hurts," Oddie noted. He not only helped to write the show, but also composed songs for it, several of which were released on albums and as singles, most memorably Funky Gibbon in 1975, which spent 10 weeks in the charts, peaking at number 4. When the BBC prevaricated over whether to do another series, the Goodies moved to London Weekend Television on a 3-year contract, but ran out of steam after one season. Because of its perceived lack of sophistication and popularity among children, The Goodies was never accorded the critical acclaim of Monty Python, and the trio's constant gripe was that the shows were not repeated. In 2005, the BBC relented and produced a tribute evening. The nostalgia gathered momentum, and Oddie joined Brooke Taylor and Garden for a 2-week, sold-out Goodies retrospective in Australia. Yet Oddie's easygoing appearance hid a complex personality. He had a reputation for being bad-tempered and difficult to work with, and while he mellowed later, he could still be irritating. At 60, he had a nervous breakdown and was admitted to a psychiatric hospital, where he reflected on a lack of maternal affection during childhood, a factor often associated with depression in later life. William Edgar Oddie was born in Rochdale in 1941 into a family with mill workers on both sides. To his lasting shame, he took up egg collecting at the age of 6 after finding a Dunnock's egg. One year he asked for a pair of good binoculars for Christmas. By 13 he had discovered bird watching, and as he wrote in his book Gone Birding in 1983, immediately became a better person. He wrote several books about bird watching, was a council member of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, and campaigned tirelessly on behalf of wildlife. One of his last television appearances was on Celebrity Britain by Barge, then and now in 2020, gently navigating the country's inland waterways.
A revolutionary eye treatment has given a young girl hope of sight. Eleanor Haywood reports in the Times on July 24, 2026. An 11-year-old girl who was going blind has become the first British patient to have innovative gene therapy for a rare condition that robs children of their sight. The treatment, which has only been performed on one other person in the world, involves injecting healthy copies of a gene directly into the eye to stop sight deteriorating. Catherine Lestrange from North Acton in London hopes it will allow her to continue reading books, which she said was one of her favourite things to do. When Catherine was a baby, she was diagnosed with Bardet-Biedl syndrome, BBS, which affects about 1 in 100,000 births in the UK, and it leaves patients blind by their late teens or early 20s. It is caused by mutations to one of 20 different genes and can also cause kidney problems, learning difficulties, and obesity. The gene therapy, developed by the biotechnology company Myra GTX, was given to Catherine as part of an hour-long procedure at St Helier Hospital near Wimbledon in March. Surgeons removed the jelly inside one eye and injected healthy copies of a gene into the retina, the light-sensitive layer of tissue at the back of the eye. In people with BBS, small cells in the retina die, leading to blindness. Neruban Kumaran, consultant eye surgeon at Epsom and St Helier University Hospitals NHS Trust, said, "By giving a healthy copy of the gene, it helps save those cells, and the hope is that it will either stabilise or improve vision." Catherine said, "If this treatment works, it will help me to carry on seeing things around me, but most of all, I will be able to carry on reading books, which is one of my favourite things to do." Her father, the Reverend Timothy Lestrange, said that most children with BBS were not diagnosed until primary school age, but Catherine was diagnosed at a few weeks, allowing the family to plan her future. "Our policy was to develop her independence and resilience as much as possible, ready for the inevitable loss of her sight, which began with her becoming night blind and then colour blind and continued with losing her peripheral vision," he said. "We were told that possible gene therapy was many, many years away and was likely to arrive after Catherine had entirely lost her sight. So we were surprised and delighted when we learnt this treatment had become available and that Catherine would be one of the first patients in the world to receive it. The treatment was only to one of Catherine's eyes, to mitigate the risk should anything go wrong, and the team is waiting for the results." St Helier worked with experts at Great Ormond Street and Moorfields Eye Hospital to identify eligible patients, as children with BBS have genetic tests to pinpoint which of the 20 genes is mutated and based on their symptoms. Only one other person, a 17-year-old girl from Canada, had received the treatment before Catherine. The Canadian girl's procedure was at St Helier in August last year. The parents of the girl, who wishes to remain anonymous, said that this treatment has given our daughter a precious chance to preserve her vision, and we hope it will become a life-changing therapy for children with BBS10 all over the world. Kumaran said that it would be years before the full results were known, but there is hope that it may improve vision slightly, but it's difficult to say. It's not going to leave everyone with perfect vision, but the hope is to stabilise and or improve the vision, and only time will tell.
Where have all the millionaires gone? Mahreen Khan reports, The Times, July 27th, 2926. The number of millionaires in the UK has fallen to the lowest level since the financial crisis, according to new analysis. The Adam Smith Institute, a centre-right think tank, found that the number fell to 42,000 in 2025, down by 7% year on year and the lowest since 2008. It's a millionaire tracker, which uses data from the Office for National Statistics, measures the number of adults living in Britain with the net worth of at least £1 million. It includes assets such as property, pensions, cash and investments. It ticked over the 1 million mark in 2020 before reaching 1.07 million in 2021. Since then, there has been a sharp drop in each of the next 4 years. The think tank said the value of net assets has been hit by rising interest rates since the pandemic, alongside a decline in banks' saving rates. The index uses constant prices, which adjust for the impact of inflation and fluctuations in the exchange rate. In its report, the Adam Smith Institute said, there has also been a well-documented trend of high net worth individuals either leaving Britain or no longer choosing to move here. Millionaires are leaving the country for a number of reasons, including the abolition of the non-dom tax status, high levels of general taxation, and a hostile culture for wealth creators. Despite reports of wealth exodus, HM Revenue and Customs data shows no clear evidence that non-doms are leaving the UK in droves. Its latest figure shows there were 60,700 residents who had their permanent home outside the UK in the tax year ending in April 2024. Non-dom status was formally scrapped in April last year. It allowed some UK residents whose permanent homes were abroad to be exempted from British tax on income they earned overseas. The status has been replaced by new rules where foreign earnings are exempt for up to 4 years for new UK residents or those returning to the country after a decade. The ONS measures the value of household assets every 2 years, meaning there are no official figures for the exact number of millionaires living in the country. The latest data shows there are 3.7 million households with a net wealth above £1 million, most of which is the result of rising house prices. The think tank said Andy Burman should abolish inheritance tax and lower the rate of capital gains tax. HMRC data shows that 31,500 estates paid inheritance tax on death, representing about 4.5% of the people who died, in the tax year ending April 2023. Burnham said he will look in detail at equalising rates but has made no policy commitment. He has also previously suggested abolishing inheritance tax and replacing it with a care levy to fund social care reforms. Andrew Griffith, the Shadow Business and Trade Secretary, said, whatever their personal finances, everyone should care about Britain having fewer millionaires to contribute to the tax pot and creating jobs and businesses here. It's a competitive world, and when young and ambitious people are voting with their feet and leaving your country, that's a shameful sign.
Oscar Lawrence discovers the wonderful world of the Norfolk dragonfly. Norfolk Magazine, July 2026. During the winter, I am bird mad. From hordes of pink-footed geese, fresh from the bitter Arctic tundra, to gaudy-legged waders sifting through the silty edges of shore pools, I trawl through Norfolk, treasuring every last morsel of avian entertainment. In the summer, however, it is a very different story. Rather than exploring rugged salt marshes and fallow fields, I designate my precious time to staggering knee-deep through soggy peat at the edges of bog mires and fen ditches. I may get muddy and wet, but it is always totally worth it to get a glimpse into the dazzling world of dragonflies. I feel I've cast the hobby in a poor light so far. In fact, there are a handful of species that regularly colonise more well-kept garden ponds, often surprisingly quickly. If you don't already have a pond or want to revamp one to attract dragonflies, there are a few things that will make any self-respecting hawker or chaser do a double take when they see it. Firstly, popping a few emergent twigs or branches towards the middle is often popular, as males will want a perch where they can survey their territories with a wide angle. Secondly, planting emergent plants, such as water soldier, in the pond can be a lifeline. When nymphs emerge from the water to metamorphose into their star-studded adult form, they need a host plant to cling to while they make the transformation. Dragonflies undergo an unusual process termed partial metamorphosis. The nymphs split from their casings and emerge in the imago, adult, form without any intermediate pupal stage as butterflies have. Furthermore, since dragonflies are sun-loving critters, it might be best to cut back some woody scrub if it's shading the pond over. But any waterside vegetation is best left as it lends perches to damselflies, a more delicate suborder of the dragonfly. One of the first species to prospect a dragon-friendly pond is the broad-bodied chaser, often mere hours after the site's creation. Males are very territorial and are eager to stake out a new area to defend as their patch. They can be very aggressive towards encroaching insects, even those of completely different species. Many things can be said of the broad-bodied chaser, but tolerant definitely isn't one of them. Despite their asbo nature, these dragons are surely one of Britain's most vibrant. When fresh, males have a powder blue abdomen studded with citrus yellow and dark wing bases intersected by tangerine veins. They are truly stunning and bring a daub of light to any garden. Venture out into the broads, however, and a far greater diversity of species can be found. From when May swings around through to early August, the Norfolk hawker is a denizen of our fenland dykes and reed beds. In the midst of climate change, influxes of southern European insects are becoming increasingly regular, and some true rarities often appear among their number. In late summer, periods of light southwesterly breezes can bring high pressure systems from across the channel, carrying with them a suite of Mediterranean dragonflies. One such dragonfly that has begun to create its stronghold in the Broads as a result of global warming is the Lesser Emperor. Much like the Norfolk hawker, the Lesser Emperor spends much of its time on the wing, skirting the vegetated edges of sheltered bays. In short, this prehistoric-looking tribe of insects are well worth your weekends.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions. Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include Cly Windmill Up for Sale,
a cat apparently shot, a parish council's parking battle, and the success of Cromer Carnival.
A Norfolk landmark which has stood on marshland since the early 1800s has hit the market. Clye Windmill has stood on North Norfolk's marshland since the early 1800s, serving a range of functions such as a grain mill and a film set, and is currently run as a holiday let and wedding venue. Letting agents at Strutt and Parker said, it offers a purchaser an established business, a striking historic building, and one of the best views on this stretch of the coast. The property includes original features such as a white painted timber cap, exposed beams, and brick fireplaces. Accommodation within the mill and adjoining ground floor rooms include a sitting room, dining room, study, and a kitchen breakfast room. There are further self-contained guest rooms and cottages, giving a total of 9 ensuite bedrooms across the property. It last went up for sale in 2019 and was bought by Natalie and Varianne Bush in 2021 for around £3 million. The freehold property, which sits within an area of outstanding natural beauty, is now up at a guide price of £2,650,000.
A heartbroken family in North Norfolk has been left facing a huge vet bill after their beloved pet cat was found with horrific injuries thought to be caused by a gunshot. Morris, a ginger Tom rescue cat, lives with his owners and their 2 children in Clye. He was found by his owner, Stuart Banks, with his leg hanging off on the morning of Sunday, 2nd of August, and was rushed to an emergency vet. Mr. Banks said it had seen Morris late on the Saturday night, and in the morning he was found by the door and couldn't get through the cat flap. It was really quite horrific, he said. Morris was later operated on at the Grove Veterinary Hospital in Fakenham, where his leg was amputated. Vets originally thought the injury was caused by being twisted or caught in something. But after examining the wound, they concluded that the damage was consistent with a gunshot wound. Mr. Banks said he has reported it to the police, who have recorded the incident as a wildlife crime. The family have 2 rescued cats and a dog, and thought they had insurance for all pets. But they have not been able to find insurance for Morris, meaning that the vet's bill must be covered out of pocket. As of the end of last week, more than £1,700 had been raised to help cover Morris's emergency treatment and ongoing care. When Morris was taken home from the vet on Tuesday night, the bill amounted to £4,777.70. Despite the violent crime, the family still want their pets to roam free. I don't want to stop the cats from going outside. They should be free to travel around. But it makes me anxious that someone in our community is willing to do this, Mr. Banks said. I am just really sad. My children are both really sad. And this has happened, that someone could do this to our pet. We are hugely grateful to the community for rallying around us and supporting Morris to get back on his feet. To donate, go to www.gofundme.com and search for Give Morris the Chance to Thrive on 3 Legs.
A North Norfolk Parish Council has been forced to act after dangerous parking on a blind bend caused near misses. Villagers in East Runton have raised concerns to the Norfolk County Council and Norfolk Police over the cars parked on Fellbrig Road. Locals have said cars parked on the road during busy summer days are blocking driveways and causing congestion. Runton Parish Council has been forced to put up no parking signs to block off the area after repeated calls for action from police brought little response. Despite the council having no formal highway powers, it is said it is trying to keep people safe while welcoming tourists. Mike Ashwell, a local in his 60s, said there is alternative parking on Beach Road for tourists. He said, "We are very much pro-tourists in East Runton, but totally against illegal parking, be they locals or tourists." Mr. Ashwell explained that parked vehicles have caused many a near miss. Cars overtaking the parked vehicles are on the wrong side of the road on a blind bend. The parish council initially put up no parking signs on the wooden bollards. They worked for a short time, but ultimately caused people to park further up the road, closer to the bend. The temporary wooden stakes and signs have now been installed on the common to deter people from parking on the road anymore. A spokesman from the parish council said, "The village was never designed to cope with the number of vehicles that use Fellbrig Road and the surrounding lanes and roads. Unfortunately, the parish council is not responsible for the road and is limited as to what it can do to ease the problem." Norfolk County Council said there is no official parking restrictions at the location, so it is unable to enforce parking. Norfolk Police have been contacted for a comment.
Families flocked to Cromer's seafront as the town's carnival got underway with a colourful first week of free activities for children. From chalk masterpieces stretching along the promenade to sandcastles, sea gardens and sculptures on East Beach, youngsters were encouraged to get creative and embrace traditional seaside fun. The packed programme included sports, float decorating, a junior town crier competition and paper boat, raft and plane races. Carnival Queen Naomi Bushell presented the Town Crier Trophy to children who stepped up to make their proclamations. A downpour during float decorating did little to stop the enthusiasm. Friday provided a lively finale with homemade vessels launched on North Lodge Park's boating lake, before families headed to the pier forecourt for an afternoon disco of music, games and dancing. Behind the scenes, volunteers kept the week running, helping children take part and ensuring parents could enjoy the carnival atmosphere. The celebrations are not over yet. A second free children's week has started, with Sam and the Orange Crew hosting events for children. For more information on other events, visit www.cromercarnival.co.uk.
A road by a North Norfolk town is set to close for crews to carry out work on communication poles. Pond Road near North Walsham and in the parish of Swayfield and Bradfield will temporarily close on Tuesday, August the 18th, between 9:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. for BT to carry out pole testing works. It affects a section 240 metres from the Church Road junction. Drivers will be diverted via Pond Road, Church Road, Bradfield Common and Southreps Road. Pedestrians and signed property access will be permitted.
Norfolk has been named as one of the riskiest places in the UK for cyclists. The county was ranked 9th out of 37 counties and county authorities in a study by process safety consultancy Sigma HSE, which analysed Department of Transport data on cycling-related road casualties. Incidents involving cyclists amounted to 9.51% of all road casualties in Norfolk in 2024, higher than the national average of 8.13%. Dr. Dinah DeFowler, Operations Manager at Sigma HSE, said, The cyclists' share of casualties shows how much of the harm on a road network is landing on the people with the least protection. The study recorded a total of 2,154 road casualties in Norfolk, with 205 involving cyclists. Researchers argue that focusing on the proportion of cyclist casualties rather than the raw numbers better reflects the risks faced by riders in this country. Norfolk ranked third out of six East of England counties.
Campaigners are urging North Norfolk District Council to examine whether future house building in Hoveton could worsen pressure on the Wroxham Bridge and local air quality. Their call comes during the Council's local plan scoping consultation, which is seeking views on the evidence needed for a replacement plan. Broad's Bulletin, an online community group, says further growth in Hoveton must be assessed across the North Norfolk Broadland boundary because Hoveton and Wroxham function as one settlement. It said the bridge is already a key traffic pinch point and wants the council to consider road capacity, possible mitigation and developer funding before homes are built. The group also said Hoveton should be specifically included in air quality work, pointing to the historic nitrogen dioxide concerns near Wroxham Bridge. Campaigners say the adopted local plan increased Hoveton's allocation from 160 to 240 homes, while a requirement for the developer contributions towards a Wroxham and Hoveton network improvement strategy removed during examination. They contrast this with North Walsham, where specific highway works were identified to address traffic effects in Coldishall. North Norfolk District Council has been asked whether it accepts the concerns, what transport and air quality evidence it holds, and whether it will include the issues in its new local plan. The scoping consultation closes on August the 31st.
A primary school has been left shocked and disheartened after a sign outside the school was vandalised overnight. Vandals targeted Horning Primary School's pre-school, tearing up the sign between 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. on Tuesday, August the 4th. A spokesman for the school said, "Our pupils work so hard throughout the year, raising significant funds each term to support and improve their school community. To see something they take such pride in deliberately damaged is both shocking and disheartening. The school is calling for anyone with information that may help identify those responsible to contact the school office." The spokesman for the school added, "This incident has been reported to the police and we would appreciate any information that could assist with their inquiries. Thank you for your support."
Our last few articles cover the mystery of dead whales, a cultural festival coming to Norfolk, new twist to that bus shelter story, and a slime shop opens in Holt.
The death of two whales on a Norfolk beach has stumped experts and sparked scientific investigation. The mammals washed up on the Norfolk coast between Munsley and Trimmingham on Monday, August the 3rd, and later died on the beach. Despite research efforts by a team of experts from the Cetacean Strandings Investigation Programme, the CSIP, their exact species remains unconfirmed. The specialists initially thought they might be Sowerby's beaked whales, but said they looked unlike any other examples of the species found in the UK. Decomposition had already set in due to the warm weather, but it was determined that one whale was male and the other was female, and that both were juvenile animals around 3.4 metres in length. A spokesman for the organisation said, "They appeared unlike any Sowerbys the CSIP team had previously dealt with, and may represent a more unusual beaked whale species in the UK. Further investigations during the necropsies failed to confirm species. Skeletal material has been collected to allow morphometric analysis, and genetic investigation will also be conducted in an effort to definitively confirm species identification. North Norfolk District Council officers worked alongside whale experts to recover the animals on Tuesday. The CSIP team from the Zoological Society in London then carried out necropsies at an off-site location. While the animals appeared in generally good nutritional condition, both had empty stomachs. Experts suggest this may be consistent with live strandings out of habitat animals, a diagnosis seen in previous cases involving beaked whales and other deep diving species. The CSIP spokesman said further analysis of skeletal and genetic material is planned in the hope of confirming the species. He said, "We'll post more information as and when we learn more."
Hidden spots and experiences across Norfolk will open their doors as England's largest festival of history and culture returns next month. Heritage Open Days will run from Friday, September the 11th to Sunday, September the 20th, offering special access to sites that are usually closed to the public or revealing new perspectives on familiar places. Highlights from the 2026 programme include tours of Old Carrow House in Norwich and backstage access at Cromer Pier and the Pavilion Theatre. It includes free entry to Oxborough Estate near King's Lynn and a chance to explore the Bell Tower at Great Yarmouth Minster. Katie Ellis, the producer for Norfolk Heritage Open Days, said, "We're thrilled to have over 300 events in the Norfolk programme for visitors to enjoy. It's a testament to all the organisers and volunteers who share their heritage stories and bring this festival to life. Other events include King's Lynn Heritage Open Day, which on September the 13th will feature reenactors, family activities, miniature trains and boats, classic cars and exhibitions. In Norwich, the Forum will host Portraits of Life, a photographic exhibition running throughout the festival. The 2026 Norfolk Heritage Open Days brochure, listing 230 events across the county, is now available to help visitors plan their experience. These brochures can be picked up at the Forum, Norfolk Libraries, participating venues, museums, shops and tourist attractions. Booking opens for most of the pre-book events at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, August the 26th. Some events are expected to fill up quickly and organisers are warning that they may be fully booked within 20 minutes. Many events require booking directly through the venue's website, by phone or by email, as stated in the individual listings. For those unable to secure a place, more than 180 events in the programme are drop-in and do not require pre-booking. All events are free to attend, and visitors are encouraged to start planning their itinerary early.
Part of the famous Sheringham bus shelter could get a second lease of life, brick by brick. The structure on station approach was ripped down by a digger in July, much to the anger of protesters who tried to save it. Now Sheringham Town Council is set to consider how salvaged brickwork can be designed and displayed. The council has chosen to retain sections of the shelter's distinctive curved brickwork after the 1950s landmark was demolished in July. A group of volunteers and councillors came together with local partners such as Sheringham Art and Sheringham in Bloom to consider how to pay tribute to the historic structure. campaign group Save Sheringham's Historic Bus Shelter said in a social media post, "Like so many of you, we are truly sad that we haven't been able to save and keep our much-loved bus shelter standing as a whole. It was a cherished landmark, full of happy memories for generations of locals and visitors. The campaign group is also collecting ideas for a tribute and will present them to the council for consideration. In December 2025, the shelter was the focus of a sit-in protest to prevent its removal by Norfolk County Council. Although it was originally saved, the shelter was demolished following reviewed council plans to clear the site for a modern travel hub. At 580,000, travel hub could be completed within 9 months of the demolition. The new modern hub has been designed after a public consultation and is planned to blend in with the surroundings, including the Heritage Railway Station. Sheringham Town Council had looked at other options during the controversy. One was moving the shelter brick by brick elsewhere in the town at an estimated cost of £100,000, and another option was a partial redesign which would retain some elements of the existing structure.
What started as an internet craze is now the theme of a new business venture in a North Norfolk town. The Slime Studio has opened its doors in Holt's Feathers Yard, offering a hands-on experience where visitors can design and make their own personalised slime from start to finish. Options include choosing the base, colours, scents, decorations and unique charms to take home. Founder Lara Doughty said, "After years working in travel, I wanted to build something that brought people together through creativity and fun. Seeing children and adults become completely absorbed in making something with their own hands and watching families laugh and create together has been incredibly rewarding. Everyone is so happy and proud of their creations. I wanted to create an experience that children remember long after they've left. Watching their faces light up as they create something that's completely their own is what makes it all worthwhile. It's messy, creative, screen-free fun that families can enjoy together." Inspiration for the studio came from time abroad with her children. They came across a slime shop and her children immediately wanted to go in. They chose their own charms and it became a highlight of their holiday. The concept began as a pop-up shop and improved so popular that Mrs. Doughty decided to make it permanent, with some visitors queuing for up to 45 minutes. Moving forward, she hopes to hold regular workshops, birthday parties, seasonal events, and new slime experiences throughout the year. Mrs. Doughty said, "The response since opening has been amazing and it's been fantastic welcoming so many local families into the studio. I'd love it to become somewhere families return to again and again to make memories together. The Slime Studio is open Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. throughout August and other school holidays. During term time, it will be open Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and then the whole weekend for birthday parties or private events all year round."
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was David Mitchell, and editing and producing this issue was Rick Waghorn.
Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's cheerio.